Welcome to Exec Insights, brought to you by QUTX, Executive Education for the Real World. I'm Kate Joiner. When I meet people around town and talk about QUT, a frequent response is, "Oh, I love the Cube. I took my kids there," or maybe, "I took my leadership team there." It's a great feature of the Gardens Point campus and a visible commitment to engaging students and the community in STEM education. To give us a bit of a behind the scenes on the Cube, we have Sean Jewett, and Sean is the studio manager of the Cube. So Sean, you've got a great job. Do people tell you that all the time, that you've got a great job?
Yes, I do actually. Thanks for having me. It's good to come and talk about the Cube. Yes, I do hear quite frequently that people think we have a great job. I think because they see the content on the Cube and they think for the most part we're just locked away playing games.
Playing games. That's certainly what we think. we think you've got the funnest job in the university.
We do get that a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong, we do a healthy amount of what we call research to see what the growing trends are in game development and the products that are out there to see if they can inspire the content that we put on the Cube. But then we actually have to physically build it as well. So we build all of the large-scale content in-house in our team.
So this is where we pause and realise that we are audio, and there's probably some people out there in our listeners who are saying, what is this Cube thing that they're talking about? So if someone went over to the Cube now, Sean, what would they experience?
Yeah, so the Cube is it is still the largest digital interactive learning display on the planet. It's made up of five different zones that we call screens. There are four single-story screens and one large two-story screens. And what a screen is it's an array or a row of touch panels along the bottom that pick up your touch when you touch the glass on the screen. And then we build that in an interactive experience. So as you touch items on the screen, you'll play it through the screen like a large iPad. And then we can blend that with the projection space that's above it so that we can show very large-scale interactives. So as you come into the Cube space, you're met with a single story zone, but as you proceed through to the main screen, screen one, it's two stories tall and 30 meters long, built in sort of like a wedge shape. So we can show dinosaurs at full scale. We have a reef interactive on there so you can see everything at real life, but we can also show a lot of information at a glance. So we build our content with the idea of different types of experiences, so what the off-the-wall experience will be when you first come in and see something, and then we hopefully inspire you to go up to the screen and then touch it, and then we give you an interactive experience while you're on the wall as well.
Yes, and for those who haven't been, it is amazing. It's an amazing thing. And also, I mean, it's a wonderful interactive wow experience, but it's also contained within a very lovely architectural building, which is, what building is that?
It's the Science and Engineering.
So this is obviously, I mean, I see it as an outreach activity for science, technology, engineering and maths. So it's QUT's attempt to engage the broader community in the challenge and the wonder that is STEM. Have I got that right?
That's exactly right. It has a few feathers in its cap. Having something on campus that people can come and interact with for free to even inspire tourists to come on. You wouldn't traditionally go to a university campus to go and see something as a tourist, but we get a lot of tour groups through that see it. So we have that forward-facing aspect of what the installation is for the university and promoting what we do here at QUT in a real big wow way. But you did touch on the STEM there, so that's really what we're about. So the Cube was a response to a paper that came out about 6 or 7 years ago about the decline in the uptake of STEM disciplines through into higher education. So this was built as an opportunity to build high-end engaging content to inspire the high school students to then follow through in those STEM disciplines. So every large-scale project that we do on the Cube is aligned to the national curriculum, and we work hand-in-hand with the STEM engagement team here at the university to make sure that the content going on there is accurate, scientifically accurate, and meets the needs for on-site coursework. So the Cube level, you come in on the ground level, but in the Science and Engineering Centre, that's actually level 4. On level 5, there's a dedicated classroom for the high schools to come in and learn, and they'll do associated workshops in the classroom as well as on the wall of the Cube.
So how successful do you think we've been in that mission, I suppose, which is to engage school children and the broader community in STEM and invite them to pathways into science?
I think anecdotally we've been very successful. Our biggest indication of how well that's going are the high schools that keep coming back to do those workshops. So we've been running some of the older projects that have been on there for a couple of years now, and as a result of the workshops associated with those older projects, we notice a lot of the schools are coming back and bringing their 10s, 11s and 12s back repeatedly. Also, the demand is so high for those workshops. So for all the workshops that are offered through the CUBE experience, they're now booked up right through until the end of calendar year 2018.
Wow.
And the demand is very, very high for all of them. So we average 2 to 3 schools in every week for different workshops associated with the different projects. But then on the other side of that, the public and community engagement side, we see it all day, every day. We're still averaging a couple of tours, professional tours through the space each week, and then a couple of hundreds of people through every week, just walk-ins and visitors to the space. And we can see from observing how much of an experience and how much fun they're having as well. So yeah, it's great.
So what's the key to making it so engaging? What are our strategies around that, or what skills do you have to bring to that?
There's a few design decisions that we're very conscious of, and that is to allow people to have a safe experience. So when they do make the approach to the screens to touch it, they get immediate rich feedback, and you can't do anything wrong. So in a traditional game development sense, you would always have what we call fail conditions. So if you didn't achieve, you would fail and then have to go and start again. We don't design that way for the CUBE. We want everyone to have a very rich and open experience. And if we do want to inspire you to keep trying things again, you do it in a safe way. And we keep that, what we call that loop, really tight. So that you can spend, even if you only have a couple of minutes on the CUBE, you'll have an immediate rich experience. But then we build depth into our experiences as well, like our Codabot project that came out for Robotronica this year. You can spend a good couple of hours trying to program those robots if you get really deep into it.
Mm. Yeah, well, there's obviously, you know, more to it than we see. We see the wonderful final product. But who are your colleagues in the CUBE, and what skill set do we need to make that happen?
So the CUBE studio is broken into two parts. We all work out of the one office, but we have the day-to-day maintenance and operations of the space, because it's our job as well to keep the CUBE open. So we're actually open 7 days a week, 10 a.m. till 4 p.m, and it's open free to the public. So we need to make sure that the lights are always on, we're ready to go to welcome people in. So we look after the hardware and the software behind the systems. So we have an AV technician who also manages the corporate events that we have in the space. And we have a systems administrator that looks after the back-end software. That's one side of the team. And then we have the development arm of the team. So we have two software engineers or programmers. We have one content designer and one digital artist. And then myself over the top is like the production manager that oversees that. So in the big scheme of things, it's quite a modestly sized production team for the content that we do. So we're able to employ a lot of veterans from the industry, so we can get things done quite quickly and get them up
it's
there.
It's funny to think of veterans of the industry, because you think it's not really an industry that's been around long enough to have veterans, or am I wrong?
Well, depending on when you got into games, you could have at least 20 to 25 years under your belt.
Ah, interesting.
The average that we have in the studio is about 10 years worth of development experience. Yeah.
Now, Sean, you were a game developer yourself. You were telling me so that your history before the CUBE was in Halfbrick, which Sean was telling me their claim to fame, among other things, was the Fruit Ninja.
So it was a pretty straightforward game. Fruit would come up on the screen and you would slice it with your finger. So your finger was the blade. And one of the highest downloaded apps of all time now. So over 1.5 billion downloads.
Yeah, and developed right here in
successful.
Brisbane.
That's right, homegrown talent here in Brisbane.
Was that one that David Cameron was caught playing? I think in Parliament he was.
Yes.
He was caught playing Fruit Ninja.
That's right.
Yeah,
we were pretty happy
good.
When we saw things like that.
Yeah.
Of it being picked up like that. We even had a nice story where Antonio Banderas was doing the Puss in Boots movie through Shrek, and he thought that it would be a really good idea to put the cat in with the fruit. So we ended up making a movie tie-in version of that game as well. So that was pretty neat working with DreamWorks. But it was a really fun period through my career.
What period was that?
That was just over 4 years ago. I'd been there for five years, before I came to QUT. And we saw a big shift from doing our own work for hire projects and contract work through to building our own IP. So I mentioned to you earlier that a lot of the larger studios in Brisbane were aligned to businesses in the US, and when the GFC hit, a lot of them unfortunately fell on hardships, and a lot of the larger studios in Brisbane as a result closed.
Yes, because I remember we had a little bit of a golden period.
That's right, we really had
in Brisbane.
A magic
period. It was something that we thought was going to be a real high point for Brisbane, or something that we all look to, but then the GFC took it with a lot of other businesses, small businesses.
Yeah. Yes, but we were very fortunate through that period that we had enough time to make a shift. So we shifted onto the mobile devices and then came up with new IP like Fruit Ninja, and that kept us humming along. So the Brisbane scene has shifted to more of your sort of indie studios, so 5 to 10 person studios. But Halfrick's still humming along and doing their thing as well.
And obviously we were able to benefit from all those game development skills that you developed, Sean. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. So I was lucky enough that the Cube existed when I came to QUT.
Yes, because there's only so many cubes in the world.
That's right.
In fact, we're the number one, yeah.
Yeah, it had already been built and it had its original batch of content on there. But then it was time to have a think about what the ongoing capabilities would be for the Cube. So that's why we reframed it into more of a development type studio, so that we could continually roll out and expand our portfolio of content, so that we weren't just relying on one or two projects and getting stale. So we're always looking towards what's next and what could be different on the Cube, but also trying to target areas in STEM that haven't really been addressed at the space yet.
So what are we thinking about for the next 12 months with that in mind?
Without
giving out too many secrets, I suppose,
I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, no.
We haven't really targeted biology as such yet, so one of our next large-scale interactives will have a biology stream through that, so that we can target that back into the schools, and also some mathematics.
I think we did have some, when I visited, it had some trigonometry or something that you
One of our projects, the Retro Arcade, we show the back-end maths for some of those programs. But we haven't really fully exploited that side of mathematics yet, so I'm going to go a bit deeper in there.
Mm. Amazing. So how do you, so when you're thinking about your annual program for the Cube, so how many different sort of displays would you have in a year?
So we
you change it up, yeah.
Yeah, we try and release one large-scale interactive per year, but we've been pretty lucky that we've been able to do a couple each year over the last 4 years. We also have an artist in residency stream, which builds our portfolio of content by supporting artists to build for the space as well.
Oh, I see. So there's a distinct line of work that's a digital artist as opposed to being
a digital artist thinks of technology and interactive in an artistic form. But the digital artist that I refer to that we have in our team is the person that creates the visual assets. So for the dinosaur project, creates the dinosaur, makes that move. So all the visual aspects of that. So for the artists in residency, they don't have to stick to the STEM initiatives that we do in our large-scale content. So they can be a bit more artistic free with their ideas and coming up with those.
Just come up with something that's aesthetically wonderful.
Aesthetically pleasing.
That's their
Which remit. We try to do as well to keep people in the space, but we still have to have that education slant to it. So when we're coming up with our next batch of ideas, there's a few aspects to that. We need to make sure that it's engaging to anyone coming into the space, but then specifically hitting those STEM initiatives. So we pitch our ideas into a pool of ideas. We've in the past had expression of interest calls as well. And then all of those ideas go up to the Vice Chancellor and are approved at the Vice Chancellor level. So Peter Coldrake,
he makes the final decision?
He makes the final decision. So
wow,
all the large scale interactives have gone across his desk and he's chosen them. And then he's also part of our stakeholder group as we roll out the content.
How cool is he?
He's very cool. And this is obviously part of his legacy to the university as well.
Of course.
Having the Science and Engineering Centre and the pool and the precinct over there at that end of the campus, it's great to catch people coming in over the Goodwill Bridge side, over the Brisbane River, it's great.
It is great, yeah. So you've got a program coming up for the school holidays. There's probably many parents who would be excited to hear that.
We do, yes.
Yeah, so what's on offer for the school holidays?
So we offer a summer holiday program. It's free entry. Please just come on in. It's from the 6th to the 14th of January. We're having a big launch day on the 6th with a few extra things, but you can come in and you can experience the CodaBot project. You can learn a bit more about the project itself and a bit more of a deep dive into coding.
So Codabot allows you to
fit out and code your own robot live on the wall. So we've built our own in-house coding language that's based off a program called Scratch that the students learn in school, in primary and secondary. So you can come in and you can attach like a plastic sensor. You can tell the robot to go and search for plastic, pick it up and drop it in the right bin. So all the robots are working in a communal recycling plant. So we're covering a few things there. We're showcasing QUT's robotics initiatives. We're giving a safe environment for people to be able to upskill on coding and sort of break down the stigma around coding and what it is. So it's a logic-based problem-solving system that we built. And then showing the human endeavour of recycling, we give you some information around that as well. So it ticks a lot of boxes in that project.
So you can code your own robot and see it operating in the cube?
In the cube, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing, yeah. And you also mentioned there's a tie-in with the museum.
That's right. So the Art Museum has some experiences for that holiday program as well. There's also more complimentary experiences. There's a tank VR project, so you can put on a VR headset and in a virtual world drive a real remote-controlled tank around, and that's really neat as well. So there's a lot of little different activities that happen if you can't actually get on the cube walls straight away. There's probably about 10 to 15 experiences for that holiday program. And it's air-conditioned, it's free.
And can grown-ups come too?
Absolutely, everyone's welcome. Yep,
and all the academics, we'll be so there.
Yes.
that sounds absolutely fantastic. So now, Sean, this is a question I ask every guest to sort of tap into their mind, I suppose. So what are you reading currently? Are you a reader?
Not so much. It's mainly for us and what we do, it's keeping a finger on the pulse of what's out there as in the games world. So a lot of the things that I do actually read are websites like Gamma Sutra, Kotaku and Destructoid to see what's really popular out there, but also what's not going well. And a lot of cautionary tales from developers on those websites as well. So it's not always sunshine and rainbows, but it's good to hear what's out there as potential gotchas as well. So a lot of learning experiences from other developers and a lot of knowledge sharing on those sites as well.
So you like to see what's out there in gaming generally, yeah.
That's right. And see where we should spend our research time.
Your research time.
Yes.
And what personally excites you about this space at the moment?
I really like the enjoyment that students get out of the experience. And it's a consistent thing that we get feedback on, but we always feel it every day as well, about how cool this would have been when we were going through high school to have a learning tool like the Cube and how it would have potentially influenced our careers going forward and what we would have studied. So it's always great to see the reaction from people coming in. Also, during things like the holiday program, seeing multi-generational families like grandparents, mum and dad, and the kids all coming in together and having a group family experience in the space as well. Because in addition to the Codabot project, we have one based around chemistry. We have a dinosaur project as well, so you can see life-size dinosaurs roaming around. And seeing them all have an interactive experience, whereas at your home, your Xbox and your PlayStation, you wouldn't necessarily get grandma or granddad to sit down and have that experience with you. It's more of a solitary thing, whereas we hit mass market with the size of the cube and what you can do with it.
We can all do it together.
Yeah.
That is so fantastic. Well, I've learnt so much in just the short amount of time that we've had together. And the Cube's honestly a couple of hundred metres from where I am, and I've probably visited it only a few times. So I'm certainly going to get over there a little bit more. Yeah. And hopefully I'll see you there.
I'm always there. Always doing a tour or showing another group around. Yep, come and find me.
Yeah, we will certainly do that. Well, Sean, thank you very much for being our lucky 13th guest.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Exec Insights. For more information about QUT's executive education programs, please search QUT Executive Education and you'll find a full range of our programs and services.